Major KH lease Real 2. What were the domestic arrangements like at Sandhurst when you were here as a cadet?
Well, the one sort of didn't really notice the better. They were just magnificent. I mean, that one was so well looked after and didn't complain about the food. And that one was, it was actually wonderful.
You mentioned the June ball. Were there any other formal occasions that you had to attend, like regimental guest nights or company dining nights?
No, I don't think there were. It was a June ball. You could go if you wanted to. And lots of them, of course, went. Yeah, I wasn't having any girlfriends in those days, so I never went, except on one occasion.
How did you take to the discipline?
Well, one just had to knuckle under it, I suppose. One was disciplined at school, and one just had to do as one was told, and that was it. And it was strict, I suppose, but it wasn't unreasonable.
What method of assessment was used at the time? Did you have formal examinations or tests?
Oh, well, there were exams, yes, after each term, and sometimes if one wasn't good at this, one dropped a term. Mm. And one friend of mine dropped a term, and he found himself put into another building. Mm. That was what horror was. It was dropping a term. And I suppose you drop two terms, you're out in your neck. Mm. Of course, in those days, certain numbers had. Well, I don't think my father was in the TA, man, he was dead, of course, and one had to pay to be here. But I think my mother, she didn't have to pay us very much. So she got a cheque back for all that. But it was so much a term to be at Sandhurst.
Now, we arrived here in 1934, and how old were you at that time? You 18 or 19?
Yes, 20, I suppose. I remember when I joined my regiment, my 21st birthday, we were doing a march in the middle of Dartmoor. So I suppose I'm 20, I suppose. No. Some of them came in early, or the bright ones.
Towards the end of the 1920s, trouble started bubbling up in Europe again. Were you aware of that? Did you have any ideas about political prospects?
No, I don't think one took much notice of it. They didn't discuss it very much in the army. Of course, 1930, later on, of course, it started to bubble up again a bit, I suppose.
Can you remember when it was that you first felt it was a possibility there might be another European war?
Yes, I suppose. I'll tell you about when we were in India, I suppose. There was a possibility, and papers came out and all that. Mm. And, I suppose when I first joined the army, Edward VIII was about to be thrown out. Oh.
But did you have any strong feelings about that?
Yes, I think one was. Luckily, one didn't have to make decisions about it. But I suppose one would have backed down if there had been a showdown. That was it.
There wasn't a showdown.
No, there wasn't a showdown. You know, Edward, when he gave up the throne. I remember listening to all his talks, etc.
It was
so especially interesting because my commission is actually signed, I could have brought it today, so by Edward, with a personal signature on top. I don't know what they do nowadays. I send you a copy of it. So Edward Ricks.
Something of a rarity.
Yes, and one's sword as well, one had a sword, and that was Edward. It was interesting, I still got it to tell him.
But, what happened after you left Sandhurst? What was the next step?
The next step was down to Plymouth. I was stationed, sent down to Plymouth, into my regiment there, which was 1st Battalion of the South Regiment. And I arrived in Plymouth with all one's kit, etc., etc. And we were stationed outside Plymouth at a place called Crown Hill. And that was our barracks, a newish barracks, not the road, there was another barracks, which was even newer, There was a Fort Belisa barracks. We were in at the time. I forget which reason it was in there. But anyhow, going back to Plymouth now, I see it's all been changed. And I think at Crown Hill, they made my barracks, the barracks, into a police court.
What was the regiment doing when you joined them?
Well, the regiment was basically they were training. The troops came and trained at the depot. They joined the regiment for a certain amount of training, and then they were shipped out to the places of India and places like that. Well, Indian, where the battalions in India and other places were kept up to full strength. So at home, one did sort of normal regimental training and marches, etc., and we went on to Dartmoor and in tents and marched around the place. And when we were fed up, we couldn't do very much. So, you know, they said, no soldiers there, they're all on duties. So we went and played golf around the golf course, sitting out at Roebury, I think it was.
What did regimental training consist of, this routine training for a group? Well, what would you do with them?
Sort of four groups. Rifle training, company training, and regimental training. That's how it sort of worked out. And from we would go off shooting at the other side of the water at a place called Tridanto, which is a big fort there.
What was your function when you arrived? What did they give you to do when you first arrived from Sandhurst?
I remember going out on parade, watching the battalion on parade. They said, "You must come and look at the battalion on parade." And I thought, we all thought to ourselves, what an awful shower that was. They were arms filled so ghastly. Mm. And after Sandhurst, where we were really smart, this awful battalion was on parade. It was our first thought. And that was it.
What did they give you to do? What was your job within the battalion when you joined them?
We went to the company office. I guess we was in charge of it, I can't remember. And the big thing was the day used to be signing passes. Now, in those days, you couldn't go out, or the soldiers couldn't go out without a pass. So we had to sign a pass so they could go down, report to the guardroom, into the town, and they must be back at a certain hour. Now, I think the idea was, this was universal throughout the army, that in case of need, or the government was a trouble anywhere, there might have been riots or anything, the soldiers were always there on need, you see. So that's why they used to have passes. And it used to be a big thing, signing a pass. It took out most of the day, as far as I can recall.
Did you have a platoon? Were you made a platoon commander on arrival?
Yes, I had a platoon, yes, of sorts. We had a full platoon, of course, in India when things started to happen.
Was your platoon under strength then, the one in
Plymouth? Well, we were terribly under strength there. Yeah. Of course, they used to have flags, and they used to say, oh, there's a section there, over there's two men, and they've got a flag, and that's a section. So they kept waving flags about the place, telling that was a section.
How many men did you have then? Do you remember what strength your platoon was when you joined them?
10 or 15, 20 or something, even less. And the full strength platoon was about 30 plus.
What sort of men were they? Do you remember
They were good old Suffolk Yukes. I mean, they were fine bunch. They were magnificent, of course, on the frontier. They weren't like some of the regiments up north, they were all a special type of man, the Suffolk Yukes.
What was special about them?
The Suffolks?
Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't mind what they did. They could sit on up on the northwest frontier, just lie on down and chewing a bit of grass. That was that. They could quite happy to go on that doing that for the Yonkers years. But you get a North Country regiment, the Lancashires, and they on the frontier, they had to be sent off because the tribes hadn't got them all the time.
Why do you think that was? Were they not well adapted to?
They weren't adapted to that sort of life, you see. That was the whole trouble with them.
Were most of your chaps from Suffolk? Were they Suffolk
men? The majority of them were Suffolk men. I wasn't Suffolk man myself, so I didn't know really much about them.
Were they all recruits, the ones you had in your first platoon?
Well, they were first at the depot battalion, where they were trained, and then they joined the battalion which was at home. And when they were trained up a bit, off they went to their various stations around India and places.
You mentioned going on route marches. Roughly how far would you go on a route march if you were taking them on
charter? 20 miles. I seem to remember marching on a 20-mile route march. From the moors and beyond Plymouth.
Did you take part in any large exercises or schemes?
Yes, we did one scheme. I was made an umpire on that particular, and they did a landing on the coast down in Dorset. And we all got into ships, and they landed. It was a bit of a shower, because I think some of the ships landed in the wrong place, but then I remember coming ashore. Being an umpire, one was watching it all going on. It was a bit of a nonsense, I must say, and I thought, my God, if we had to go to war, what was going to happen?
How did you actually get ashore from ships at that time? What was the procedure?
They just came. There weren't any landing craft. I think they just got on the coast as they could down in Dorset and they waded ashore. There was nothing like a landing craft as we know today. The problem is some didn't get the feet better than this.
What sort of scale was that? Was that a battalion exercise or something?
No, I expect it was a brigade exercise over quite a big area.
How long were you down in Plymouth?
I was at Plymouth for a year. And then I was then detailed for India, which I went, was on a boat, Southampton, and off we went to India, which was 28 days, I suppose, on a troop trip.
When you arrived at the battalion, first thing, were there any particular things you had to do? Did you have a period of silence in the mess or anything of that sort before you were?
The great thing was in those days, no women ever came into the mess. There was no ladies' guest night, nothing. And so one had guest nights once a week, and one had to dress up as uniform, bow tie, and I think one had dinner nights once or twice, if one was allowed to. Other than that, you dressed in dress uniform. It was guest nights from time to time. Good jacket, waistcoats, trousers.
Did you feel at home in the mess once you'd arrived in the battalion?
Up to a point, yes, but it was all the strange. And of course, on a guest night, one went into dinner in order of seniority. And three other people joined with me, who were up ahead, new companies. They were both senior to me. Malcolm Jerome was one of them. Then there was another fellow, and just me, I had to come in last. And when that one was officially dined in, they tried to make it as drunk as possible.
Did they succeed?
No. I was rather careful about drinks. But we didn't have to pay for drinks that night, I didn't think. I didn't understand much about drinks.
Was your social life centred on the battalion, or did you develop interests outside it?
Well, I had interests outside down Plymouth. I met my future wife, and we played badminton down there. My wife came from a naval family. Adam was going back to Yorkshire's, I think their family was the naval dockyard in Plymouth. Well, I met her, actually. And we've been married now for almost 60 years.
But you weren't allowed to marry young in those days, were you?
Well, as one was supposed to marry, we had to get your colonel's permission. But I can recall one friend of ours, who was senior to me, and he actually dared to get married while he was still at Sandhurst. I don't think they ever found out. I think he had a couple of wives over the place, but they never found out he was married while he was still at Sandhurst.
It was a very serious matter.
Oh, it would have been out. Mm. They were very particular. Mm. I can recall in India, in the war years, there was an officer there who was with me. He married a Chinese girl. And, of course, that wasn't done at all. And the war started. She hastily went off and lived on one of the islands, and I think she was put in the bag. And in due course, he was my commanding officer. So one was terribly, they were terribly particular in those days who got married. Of course, we got married in India, but we used to call the teachers, that was out altogether. I mean, that pretty conscious of who one married. I mean, some of the soldiers, they get married to what we call chichis. That was the expression. Because the chichis were half Indian. They were children of years gone by. Soldiers had married into Indian families. And they came into, and they were called chichis. That's what they used to call them. And they used to run the railways.
When you went up to India, did you have any say in the matter? Was that a result of an application, or was you
basically
drafted?
No, there was our battalion overseas, and off we went to our battalion in India. And my battalion, I arrived in a place called Mau. Now, Mau is about 400 miles north of Bombay, and one got into a train, went up the main line railway, and then one got into a smaller train, and arrived at the station in Mau.
What were your first impressions of India on arriving?
Well, it's difficult to say when it arrived, and we were in Mau. Now, Mau was a cantonment. They used to call them cantonments. And they had the barracks on the top of the hill, or rising ground. There were big barracks there. And in down the slopes, there were bungalows all round, which the officers used to occupy. And there was the officers' mess in another building. And we used to come on our bicycles, because we bought bicycles, and we used to ride into the mess, and where we used to dine. And on arrival, we thought it was delightful, because we were given our own Indian servants. So at meal times, his job was to stand behind your chair, breakfast time, or in the evenings, and there he would wait on them. And in those days we had a colonel. The colonel was he was a bachelor as well. I forget his name. Colonel Gadd, I think his name was. And he used to come in for breakfast, and they used to look at their watch. And he went racing for the colonel. He used to strict attention and said, "Good morning, sir." And they used to get up and glare at him and look at his watch and say, "Yeah, that one's coming a bit late." And he had to get out quick, back into the barracks.
What time did breakfast start?
About 7 in the morning. It depended on the time of day, really. In the afternoon, so when it was very hot, we didn't work in the afternoon, but in the monsoon times, and we got up early, and that's how it sort of worked.
What did you do in working hours? What would a normal day consist of in the cantonment
well,
Mau?
Well, we went up to one's barracks and again, one sort of didn't do very much, really, as far as I can remember. We had to go off on training, of course, and all that.
What sort of training were you doing when you went to do that?
Well, much the same as it was in England. We did full regimental training, rifle training, platoon, and up to battalion.
What would you do then if you were doing platoon training? What would be practiced at that level? Just to get an idea of the scales of training.
Well, the training would be exercises, and of course, lots of rifle training. And one is stood around with one stick in one's hand and watch the NCOs giving them the instruction. one didn't really instruct oneself. One was, of course, detailed from time to time to give lectures on this, that, and the other. I remember the colonel coming down listening to me lecturing. It frightened me no end.
What sort of things would you lecture on? Can you remember any of the subjects which you had to deliver a lecture?
Internal security duties, I think, was one of them. That was very important in those days, internal security duties.
Well,
and I had been around India better. I got pictures there, and I was telling my soldiers all about various parts of India.
But when had you been around India then? Had you been around India before?
No, I hadn't been around India. But I used to study in the evenings. I studied Hindustani. Some of them didn't, but I was all keen on Hindustani. But I was thinking at one time of transferring to the Indian Army Service Corps, which, in point of fact, I was accepted. And the colonel said, yes, he'll accept me to the Indian Army Service Corps. I think I was extremely stupid. Anyhow, I said, well, no, sir, can I go home on leave? He said, yes, we'll let you come on home on leave. So if I went home on leave, you paid your own passage, £30 returned, not on trip, but in liner. And then I came back to India. And that comes later on, I can tell you about my whole career changed.
But in but initially you were still an infantry officer.
Yes, in infantry officer.
Presumably you had a platoon in India.
I had pictures of my knees sitting in the middle of the platoon.
What was the platoon up to strength?
Absolutely in full strength.
How many men did you have in it? What sort of equipment?
33.
Yes. And what weapons and equipment did they have?
They had Lewis guns, rifles, of course, and they were just being issued, about to be issued with I think it was in the Tonka Sten gun. You know, like the automatic gun.
What did you think of the Lewis as a weapon?
The Lewis, we used to have to learn about and take it to bits, etc. It used to be all right, yes. I don't think I suppose we had it on the frontier. But they know about this for these new guns. They weren't machine guns, they were infantry weapons. Each platoon had one, I think.
Would that be the Bren gun?
Yes, it was up before the Bren gun.
You said that an important interest was internal security duties. Do you remember what principles you mentioned when you lectured about that?
Internal security duties, one was taught us a drill, what to do in case of internal security, because we never knew what happened in India, where we were now. It was all nice and quiet. Other places, you know, they would have a lot of trouble. And one lined the streets, I think in line, as far as I can see, the platoon in front, and then going down the street, the people on the left-hand side looked to the right, and the people on the right-hand side looked to the left. And then they had a little rear guard behind, so anybody started taking pop shots of you, you would shoot back immediately.
Did you actually practice these drills?
Yeah, practice these drills, yes. And of course, in due course, as I'll tell you later on, we went down to Bombay and got protection duties. I can tell you where I was when the war started.
So you did an internal security, you lectured on internal security and they did drills. What other sort of training did you do at platoon?
Well, that was it, I suppose. You were in various exercises, you know, as we did it at Sandhurst and school. Extended order and all that, and signals. In those days, everything had to, there was no wireless or anything, I had to, it was everything by signal.
What were the means of signalling then before wireless telegraphy came in?
In India, we used to have the helicopter, a flashlight.
Heliograph.
One had to learn the Morse code, or some of them did. I was never really good at that. Because that was the main thing in the helicopter.
How, How far could you signal with the heliograph? What sort of range?
Quite a long way. I suppose 2 or 3 miles. It was a clear day, like in India, as it was on the frontier. You could see the lights going. Mm. Was there in the frontier, yes. They didn't have anything else. There was no wireless.
And you mentioned also that there was training at company level and battalion level. What sort of things would you do at the higher levels, at company level, that you didn't do at platoon level?
Well, when I went out with the whole company, there'd be a company commander, and they'd do attacks on this, that, and the other exercises. They invented exercises, and this was it. I can always recall they had one battalion exercise. The go ahead company commander there, and there was another company somewhere where which we were going to attack. And I can remember this day we marched 20 miles or something, got really close to the company, and we found them all asleep. And the chair of the other company, I remember. Jackie Lloyd, his name was of some fame. He was in the First World War. I can remember I was sent out in the advance guard and we attacked him. And I remember him jumping out of bed, terrified after his life.
Caught napping.
Caught napping, it was really funny. It really sticks in one's mind. Mm. I met Jackie Lloyd as he came in. He's an incredible man, really.
What was the style of tactics you were using? Was there anything distinctive about the way in which you do an attack?
No. Mm. Even in India, it was so strong. When they went out and exercise, they used to have the officers' mess, you know, and everybody used to wander into the mess in the field conditions and have their drink and come away again and join one for two. Mm. And the poor soldiers are left there with nothing. Except the Russians. Mm. You used to say, what happens? That's how they said about things.
How often would you do company or battalion training compared to platoon? Where was the main emphasis? Was it at platoon level or was it?
Well, it was divided throughout the year, you see. Mm. That was a sort of drill. And I hadn't been there very long when we went down to duck protection duties. I can tell you about that later.
Mm. So you went down to Bombay for duck protection from Mau.
Well, the idea was that we were in Mau, it was 400 miles from Bombay, and they didn't quite know what happened to Indian troops, they couldn't trust them. So they sent 2 companies down to the docks for duck protection duties, which was, we lived in a big shed, and then in due course, I was sent with my platoon out to an island in the middle of Bombay Harbour. And it was called Butcher's Island. We went out there by boat. We were put on this island. Now, up on the island, from the First World War, was a great gun. And they said, it's very important up there because you've got all the ammunition of India there. And they actually found out where it was. But the gun was a huge gun from the last war. And it faced Bombay Harbour, looking out. So there was this gun here. Then when we took over there, there was an Indian battalion there, which they didn't trust, so they didn't know where they were going to jump. And so we took over. And I remember going around the location there, our platoon, and there was an Indian. And I said, what are your duties here? Well, his duties apparently. The gun had just come out of the store. It was completely greased up. And he said, I am here, Saab, to shoot at any German submarines which might come into the harbour. This is the most extraordinary setup.
What year was that? Would that be?
It was just before the start of war, I suppose it was 39, when war was declared. And when war was declared, I was sitting on this island called Butcher's Island. Because it was a location, that's where I listened to it on the radio, I think.
You're saying that Mau was a quiet place. Did you, was there a substantial town there or local settlement?
It was a cantonment. Mau was they had an officer's club down on Garden. There was tennis courts there. There was a golf course there. We could play golf, swimming pool. And not very far away, just the other side of Marv, about 5 or 6 miles away, there was a sailing club there. And we used to sail a boat occasionally.
Did you have much...